Doctor, my eyes have seen the years and the slow parade of fears without crying. Now I want to understand. I have done all that I could to see the evil and the good without hiding. You must help me if you can.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters. This is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Margaret Flowers, a Maryland pediatrician and an organizer with the National Occupation of Washington, D.C. She is currently working on single-payer health care reform full-time, in addition to her activities as co-chair of the Maryland chapter and congressional fellow for physicians for a national health program. Dr. Flowers is on the board of Healthcare Now and on the steering committee of the Leadership Conference for Guaranteed Healthcare. Welcome to Background Briefing, Dr. Margaret Flowers.
Thank you for having me on today.
And about a month ago, you and 50 other doctors and two nonprofit groups filed an amicus brief with the Supreme Court calling for them to strike down the Obamacare, I'm using the conservative majority, the Affordable Care Act's individual mandate and replacing it with with single payer now. Will you get a hearing or a reading or whatever is involved?
That's a good question. I doubt that we'll get a hearing of it. It's possible that we may have a minority opinion that would be written about it. But basically, we wanted to make sure that it was known, and this is something that may be read in legal journals so that it does reach a new audience. But we wanted to make it known that the individual mandate is not a solution to our health care crisis in this country. It's not necessary. In fact, it would not be sufficient. And that we do have models in the United States, our own Medicare and our VA system, which perform much better than our private insurance. And they have better outcomes and they control costs in a better way.
Well, this Affordable Care Act was a creature of a kind of compact with the insurance companies to get them in early. Clinton tried it to bring them into the tent, but then they turned on him with the ads from the two actors playing, I think, can't remember, Louise and Harry or something.
Right.
I don't recall the names, but a similar thing seemed to have happened here. He got they came in, they wrote the ground rules for this bill, and then they sort of somewhat turned against him, even though they're the beneficiaries of it. It's obviously hung up over the individual mandate of whether it's a tax or penalty. Those are the arguments today. Tomorrow, apparently, is the big day. You're going to be there tomorrow, Ryan.
Yes, we will be down there tomorrow. The two things they need to look at in terms of deciding whether the individual mandate is constitutional or not is first, using the Commerce Clause, can you force people to purchase a private product? But then second, is it necessary to force people to purchase that product in order to meet the need of our society? So in this case, healthcare. If we look at Massachusetts, which is where this model type of reform was passed back in 2006, it's very clear that it's going to perform, it's performing about the same way that we estimate it will at the national level. So about half of the people that were uninsured at the beginning of the Massachusetts bill are now insured. What they are insured with, though, is a flawed product. Private insurance in this country is not protective. There still continue to be significant barriers to care in terms of co-pays and deductibles or not covered, services that are not covered. The primary cause of bankruptcy in our country is due to medical costs, and about 80% of the people that go bankrupt due to medical costs have health insurance. So it just simply doesn't work, and we believe that the evidence shows that forcing people to purchase private insurance is a false sense of security. It makes them think they're going to be able to get health care, but in fact it further privatizes our health care system, which as a result is very expensive and leaves too many people out.
So, but of course you were never allowed in on the original negotiations, were you, really? I mean, your argument, and others, of course, have the same argument about single payer. it the door has been closed on it with this act, and if it's ratified, it'll be even more difficult. I mean, I recall, Dr. Flowers, weren't you arrested in the committee hearings early of trying to make your case before Senator Max Baucus?
That's correct. In May of 2009, the Senate Finance Committee was the first committee to take up health reform. They actually, you know, presented the white paper, which was written by a former senior vice president of public policy from WellPoint, one of the largest insurance companies in the U.S., and they were only allowing industry people to testify. And so there were eight of us, including three doctors and two lawyers, all of us single-payer advocates, who stood up in the committee and asked why the single-payer viewpoint was not being heard. This, of course, was following many visits that we had with members of Congress asking to be included, and we were arrested for standing up and saying that. Now, I did testify in the next Senate committee, and we testified in the House, but you know, as you know, this bill was, you know, made through deals with the industry before, you know, it was even put into, you know, put down on paper. And so what it is, it's a bill that further enriches the industries that are getting wealthy off of healthcare, does not address our problems. It's going to continue to leave tens of millions of people with no coverage at all. Half of the people that get new coverage will be in Medicaid, which is not an ideal system by any means. The employer-sponsored insurance, there was just a report from the Congressional Budget Office a few weeks ago saying that about 20 million people are going to lose their employer-sponsored health insurance and be pushed out into the individual market, where insurance is more expensive and is skimpier, has higher copays and deductibles. And this bill is not going to control our health care costs, which are a significant reason why we have a deficit in this country. So the bill is already in some ways falling apart. There had to be over 1,000 waivers given out from the Department of Health and Human Services. It doesn't get fully implemented until 2019. It's our opinion that we really need to stop this, you know, kind of shenanigans and really go to a serious evidence-based healthcare system, which is an improved Medicare for all.
And as you said, Congress has already created two limited single-payer systems, Medicare and the Veterans Health Benefit System. I'm curious to know, is Dick Cheney being kept alive by single-payer?
That's a very good question. I don't know what his insurance is. I imagine, he probably does have some significant public funding to his health care, something that the rest of us wish that we would have.
Mm. Well, you're demonstrating tomorrow, but people were demonstrating on all sides of it today, for and against the Affordable Care Act. And CNN has a poll out that says 43% of Americans approve of the law, 50% say they disapprove of the law, and of that 50%, 37% say they oppose the law because it's too liberal. But then 10% of that 50% say they oppose the law because it's not liberal enough. So do you? You're obviously a part of that 10%. I know you're also a part of the 99%, right?
Right.
But tell me about your 10%. Is that an accurate figure? Because everybody I know, maybe I know too many progressives, always felt that it was a mistake not to go just to expand on the pre-existing Medicare model and not to go this insurance company route. But of course, right, our government is, and our country is owned by corporations, who in turn own our politicians. So
that's correct. I mean, this is a Medicare for All system is really an evidence-based system. It's very clear. It's not even a question around the world. The countries that use a publicly financed universal health system have a better health outcomes, greater satisfaction. They have lower health care costs. And we know that, clearly, solidly, for about two decades of polling, we've seen that around 60 to 65% of Americans favor a single-payer health system. The majority of physicians do as well, and this is despite the fact that we have a corporate media that consistently portrays single-payer in a negative light, but people still favor it. 80% of Democrats favor a single-payer system. So, you know, for the Democrats, when they were in power in 2009, 2010, to dismiss it completely just shows us so clearly that both of the major parties, the Republicans and the Democratic parties, are controlled by their corporate funders. And if we want serious public policy, it's going to have to come from the people coming together, forming an independent, you know, broad-based social and economic justice movement that demands it.
Well, Dr. Margaret Flowers, it seems like you're planning on something along those lines, aren't you, with the national occupation of Washington, D.C. You're one of the organizers. It begins on March the 30th and ends on April the 30th. And on April the 2nd, you're having a conference at the Carnegie Institute in Washington, D.C. called Control the Corporation. Tell us more about that.
I'm sorry, my daughter needed something more immediately. Well, yes, we actually, we organized an occupation of Freedom Plaza in Washington, D.C. last October, and we had started planning in April before the Occupied movement came together because so many of us that were advocating for issues of social, economic, and environmental justice and, you know, advocating against our wars of aggression, found that we were running into the same obstacles, that Congress is controlled by their corporate funders, by concentrated wealth, and that public policy was not based on what the majority of people in the United States want or even on sound public policy. And so, you know, evidence-based policy. So that was a first step, was that occupation in D.C. We did some campaigns around the Super Committee trying to prevent them from cutting Medicare and Social Security. And we see this as a next step, is this one-month occupation that will focus on education for the first 2 weeks. We'll be having the social forum in addition to the Controlling the Corporations conference, which is a full day that's focused really on strategy. We've had discussions in D.C. kind of like diagnosing what the problems are, and now it's time for us to come up with a treatment plan. And that's what April 2nd is really going to be about. And it is an open conference for people who would like to come. It's free. They can register online through our website, nowdc.org. And in the second 2 weeks when Congress is in town, we'll be focused on direct action and protest to bring visibility to the issues that are important to, you know, those of us who advocate for social and economic justice.
So, Dr. Margaret Flowers, it strikes me as being incredibly tragic and ironic that most of the opposition to health care reform in this country, and it's become a mantra with the Republican presidential candidates, Obamacare, are in the red states. And a recent study, I think by the Pew Research Institute, indicated that the red states in this country have the worst healthcare outcomes and the highest numbers of uninsured. I've spoken a few times to the founder of Remote Area Medical,
right.
And he goes out, great guy, and he goes out and gives free medical care in rural areas and in some urban areas. And the tragedy is that the very people who flock to get free medical care are the ones that are buying this anti-healthcare reform. I mean, without getting into the enemy of the good, of the good is the perfect. Just in general, it is. This strikes me as an extraordinary tragedy. And also, Stan was telling me that when they poll the people who come in who need healthcare, almost 100% of them first want dental health care and secondly want eye care. And only a minority want to see doctors. So what does that tell us about what's being done so far in terms of health care? Shouldn't dentistry have been a big part of it?
Absolutely. Our dental outcomes are quite appalling, and, you know, and vision as well, because these are benefits that are not traditionally covered in insurance in the U.S. And I mean, this is ridiculous because we're spending, in many cases, twice what on healthcare per person what other industrialized nations spend, and those nations cover everybody and they have better health outcomes than we do. So it's we have the resources in this country. We have everything that we need to create a high quality national healthcare system that's universal and lifelong. And we have the majority of the people with us, but we have this corporate controlled Congress and a very propagandized population, which does act against their own best interests.
Well, but just in closing, they're being propagandized to oppose Obamacare. It's not front-loaded, so people don't recognize the benefits that are in it. Obviously, you think they should have gone another way, but just pragmatically, can you build on it or just you scrap the whole thing and then we end up with nothing?
Well, we don't really see that we can build on the Affordable Care Act and turn that into a health system. We see that the two smallest incremental steps that we need to take in order to turn healthcare around in this country and actually start creating a system that's based on improving the health of our population is to create a system, a coordinated system, where we use our health resources in a way that makes sense, and also to have the take the money that we're spending and use that to pay for healthcare, and that's done most efficiently through a single-payer system. In addition to this, we really have to address the issues of wealth inequality in this country, because we can't create a healthy population if we don't address those issues as well, and that could be a whole other show. So I think the Affordable Care Act, unfortunately, takes us in the direction of further privatizing our health care, and we need to go in the opposite direction and create a single-payer system now. Too many people are suffering and dying because we're not doing that, and that's just not acceptable.
And as I was mentioning, the evidence is so clear of the great need when the remote area medical people go out to these communities. It's tragic how many people don't have even basic health care, and it put things off to the tremendous detriment to their health. So it's a sad picture when you really really scratch the surface of what's really happening in this country. Yeah,
it's commonplace in our society. You can't go anywhere without hearing these stories.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us here today, Dr. Margaret Flowers.
Thank you for having me on.
Again, Dr. Margaret Flowers, a Maryland pediatrician and an organizer with the National Occupation in Washington, D.C. She's currently working on single-payer health care reform full-time in addition to her activity as co-chair of the Maryland chapter and a congressional fellow for Physicians for a National Health Program. Dr. Flowers is on the board of Healthcare Now and on the steering committee of the Leadership Conference for Guaranteed Healthcare. We're going to take a brief station break, and we'll be back talking about the summit in South Korea to secure loose nukes.